everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. We are off and running on Friday, October 24th. Brendan Kraft on the other side of the glass. Hey, Brendan, what's going on, man?
Just another day.
Yeah, do you have some good bump music for us?
Oh, always, Bill.
Good.
Always.
We'll be looking forward to that. Brendan, our fine young man engineering and producing the program here on The Buckmaster Show. Coming to you from Central Tucson in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, part of the Bustos Media Broadcast Center, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live local news and talk. 15 full years we'll be completing in January, which is a pretty great milestone, I think, considering 22 years over at Arizona Illustrated, Arizona Public Media. Paul Ingram is with me in studio. Sometimes I hate to even talk about some of these things, but we were talking before the show started. My first job in 1967,
right,
back in the dark ages as an intern in Chicago. But those are really exciting times in Chicago.
I bet they were.
I'm this kid going out with the news crews, and you know, there's like rioting going on, and they said, mm-hmm. "Oh, you got to wear a hard hat here," and anything can happen. It's like, whoa,
right?
What is
right.
this all about? And then, of course, next year was the summer of 68, and that was really exciting times too. But I could reminisce for a long time about that, but right now we've got
sounds like a good that'd be a good story.
It is. Yeah, we got a show to do. All right, the Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, where Paul Ingram is the senior reporter and award-winning photographer. Paul, always great to see you. Thank you for coming in.
I appreciate it.
And Dan Shear and his team at the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Thank you, Dan, for all you do, especially filling in. And Paul's filled in here on the anchor desk as well as Dan Shear. And Paul's going to do another show here coming up in November. I think he and Dylan are going to actually team up to kind of co-host a show. But anyway, on our live line, we have Tucson City Manager Tim Tomier. Tim, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you doing today?
Doing real well. How is that black cat who loves Halloween, Jack? And your wife, I think, likes, that's her favorite time of year, isn't it? Halloween in October?
That's very true. My wife, Christina, really, really shines this time of year. It's her favorite time of year, and we're working our way through all of the Halloween movies and seasonal movies like that. And Jack's right there with us watching.
Do you have like one of the giant skeletons?
Maybe more than one. Maybe two. Maybe an unhealthy number.
But Jack is still pretty healthy, I guess. He must be a middle-aged cat by now.
He's coming up on 10 years old this year.
Wow.
So he's still in the prime of life, but he's doing a little more cuddling and a little less playing.
There you go. All right, Tim, predicting where the economy is going is it's never easy, but that's really part of your job, isn't it? Especially when you look down the road 18 months from now. I know the council had a think kind of session on Tuesday night about where are we really here in forecasting what's going to be going on. And some of these numbers are kind of grim, wouldn't you say? A little bit of a shortfall for the first 3 months?
Definitely our revenues into the city are not where they would have been projected a year ago. We are seeing a number of different factors that are suggesting some slowdown in revenue here in the city. And I think we're going to start seeing that regionally more so. And I can't, my crystal ball doesn't extend beyond kind of the region here, but it's not, as some of the council members have said, it's nothing that we haven't seen before and haven't dealt with before, but those can be some tough conversations and challenging times ahead. But we're looking ahead and doing everything we can to keep serving the city.
Are you saying, I saw something in print said about a shortfall of about $24 million. Is that about where you are for the first 3 months?
That would be if the first 3 months continued and we had the same pattern for the end of the year, that would be the end of the year, $24
million. Mm. All right, let's turn it over to my buddy Paul, Paul Ingram. Go ahead, Paul.
So one of the questions I have, what goes into the city's revenue that is taking a downturn?
So we've been experiencing a downturn over the last 3 years in the amount of state shared income tax, and there was the implementation of the flat income tax under Governor Ducey. We knew that would be reducing our revenues, and that has come absolutely true. So, and that was part of our financial plan. That was the predicted revenue loss that we knew that state action would have. But what we've seen on top of that is local sales taxes are much lower than they were in the previous years. So you normally see just kind of a gradual increase in sales tax over time. But we've not only not seen a little bit of growth, what we've seen is a decline. So we're seeing sales taxes come in much lower than they have in the previous years.
Talking to other folks in other cities, Marana, Sorita, Oro Valley, is that something that's unique to Tucson, or is that something that's happening to the economy across the valley?
That's interesting, because some of my peers haven't really seen that same sales tax slowdown, but I think some of that's timing, and some of that is how closely we're looking at things. But I haven't talked to Oro Valley in a couple of weeks, but saw a little article about they had a little bit of a shortfall that they were talking about in their budget that just hit the socials probably about a week or two ago. So I think it's starting to show up in other areas outside of Tucson as well.
And do you think it's because of people aren't buying large durable goods? People aren't buying cars. They're not buying appliances unless they have to? Or is it just the economy is slowing down in general?
I think what we see in Tucson is that we're seeing less visitors from across the border. We have a lot of Mexican nationals that come up to Tucson and do a lot of their shopping in Tucson. And for a variety of reasons, we're seeing a real slowdown in that. And I think that's part of what we're seeing. I don't have enough information to project whether, people are holding off on major purchases. But when you see the housing market slow, what we're really seeing is our visitors from across the border.
Where will the cuts come from? I saw something that said that TPD may face some cuts. And I don't know if that's going to go over very well in the public right now with this whole fear that there's a lot of people that are concerned about safety in this town.
That's very correct. And so the cuts that are with TPD right now are really managing of spending. It's not a reduction in personnel. It's not asking them to do more with less. There's quite a bit of overtime that is worked by the police department and the fire department. And what they've done is identified some efficiencies they can do to reduce that use of overtime for things that don't add as much value as actually being in patrol and doing things that are, directly solving cases. So what you see in TPD is a little bit of management of overtime. And we're running our next police academy for new police recruits coming up very soon. But what we are also looking at is for our community service officers, which are the folks that do a lot of work in support of our police. We were regularly going to have that next academy in the spring. We just moved it out to the summer so that starts to hit next fiscal year. So it's more of a spending slowdown on overtime and then a little delay on that academy.
We had Councilman Paul Cunningham on the show this week, and he says if there was the will on the council, there would be enough money to actually make TPD the highest paid department in Pima County. I'm not sure where the money would come from. Do you think that could, is that realistic?
I think Paul's been very vocal about wanting to make sure that our police officers have a great rate of pay and a competitive rate of pay. That would come at the cost of cuts in other areas. I've not been asked yet to put together a strategy to do something along those lines by the mayor and council. But there is not a lot of cuts that can be done at this moment that don't come at the cost of closing a program or shifting resources from other departments.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. There's only so much you can really cut. There's only so much you can maneuver in. I mean, what would be the places that you could cut? What would be a program that you think could be on the chopping block?
So these are not proposals. So these are things that would have to be considered. So don't quote me as saying, here's what I'm proposing.
Sure.
But one of the common areas is restricting or reducing the amount of services we provide through Parks and Recreation, whether that's how many pool hours we're able to provide or the hours of our recreation centers or how well we maintain our assets, that expends beyond Parks and Rec. So it's really direct impact to consumers of Parks and Recreation services. We have spending that occurs in maintaining our facilities and our fleet. That is an area where we'd have to accept a lower standard of our facilities and our fleet. And then outside of that, that's pretty much what the general fund has. If you look at the police department as being the largest part of the general fund, and then you have the fire department as the other one, and so it really diminishes after that. We really have very little still as far as overhead in things like legal services and information technology, facilities, HR, things of that nature. Those are all extremely lean operations right now. So I think the only next place you'd be looking at is the city willing to dip into its financial reserves.
What is the reserve, by the way, at this point?
For the general fund, our total financial reserve is $141 million. That's what we consider to be our rainy day fund. That represents roughly two to possibly 3 months of operating. So it if we do go there, which is not recommended and is not something that we would want to choose to do lightly, that could be drained in a pretty short period of time.
Is there any mechanism for you to ask for more money from coming from the state? I mean, is the state share being decreasing because there's less money going to the state, or is the state just giving Tucson and other communities less money?
It's more the latter first of all, yeah, our ability to, so the state controls how cities can fund themselves. And then the state also controls much of that funding. And they've done things to limit cities' ability to generate their own revenues. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they've reduced the revenues that they send to the state. So the biggest reduction was that implementation of the flat tax, which for the city of Tucson, cumulative is about $40 million a year that we've lost from where we should be or would have previously been on that income tax. And then our ability to, we certainly have the ability to ask for direct appropriations. And we've been successful in the past to get some funding for our houseless outreach and some of our housing programs. But that's been reduced in recent years. And so the state is boxing us in, and not just Tucson, other cities. They're telling you what you can't do on your own, and then they're telling you, we're going to give you less.
Coming in on social media, someone pointing out that Pima County building permits are down 34%, as this listener points out, as reported on your show. So that's another reason the slowdown is happening here, Tim Tamir, in Pima County.
That's correct, Bill. I don't have the percentage that's within the city, but from our planning and development services director, even as recently as yesterday, we have seen a downturn in permit activity across the board coming in. So that's the new development is slowing down. You're seeing those tax revenues slowing down. You see news out of the federal government with jobs reports. You know, that's not to the scale of Tucson, but you're just seeing all the signs are bad right now.
Before we take the break, I do want to talk about Proposition 417, which is on the ballot, and city voters are currently being asked to weigh in on this. What is it, and what would happen if it doesn't pass, Tim?
So Prop 417 is the city asking for voter approval of our general plan. So this is known as Plan Tucson 2025. Cities of our size in Arizona not only are required to have a general plan, which really governs our future and how we want to grow, how we want to develop, but it also it requires voter approval. So we last obtained voter approval in 2013, and so we're due to take it to the voters. If it were not to pass, we're not off the hook. We would have to either go back to the drawing board and make some revisions, but ultimately we have to go back to the voter until we get approval.
Is that like another one of these deals, like with TEP, these renewals that go on the ballot, and if they don't, if the voters turn it down like they did, I think an election cycle or two ago, I've lost track, but it has to be picked up at some point, doesn't it?
It does. So we continue to operate under the previous general plan, and that's now 12 years old, and so it's still a great plan, but the one we're putting before voters is updated with a significant voter input or community input, and hopefully it refreshes and renews all of those commitments. But ultimately, the city runs a risk of being in violation with state law if we don't ultimately have a current and approved plan.
All right, let's take a break right here. Paul Ingram is with me in studio. Paul from TucsonSentinel.com. Tim Tomier is calling in on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. When we come back, I will ask the city manager, and I asked him this the last time he was with us a couple of months ago, what are the lessons, or as we go through the wreckage of Project Blue, did we learn anything after all was said and done? We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Check out the project list for a new $2.67 billion regional transportation plan that Pima County voters will consider next March. The RTA Next Plan proposes improvements in the greater Tucson region to reduce congestion and support cleaner air, enhance network reliability, safety, and efficiency. It will also expand transit, bike, and pedestrian options for another 20 years. Voters will be asked to okay a half-cent countywide sales tax to continue RTA improvements. The tax rate will not increase. Learn more about the proposed plan and projects at RTANext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Friday edition. Paul Ingram is here from TucsonSentinel.com. Paul, senior reporter and award-winning photographer, named by the Arizona Press Club as the Arizona Photographer of the Year. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice job, Paul.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
What was the image that sold the deal?
Oh, I think it was a collection of images.
Oh, it was.
I don't remember anymore.
We used to call that when we were back in the day when everybody had a save reel, back in the media, you'd send out to different stations, take a look at you. People would make their decision in the first 30 seconds, but you probably put out a photographic composite
it
of
was,
your
yeah,
work.
It was for a particular story, and it was for the story about the border, but it was a set of photos.
Very nice.
That did that. So, yeah. And then we have a new contest. There's a new contest. Well, there's a new winner now. So I was last year. There's a new winner.
Oh, you were
now.
Last year. Last year's new. No, you're not last year's
news.
Tim Tomier is not last year's or even last week's news. He's always in the news because he's the city manager of the largest city in our region, the city of Tucson. So, Tim, as I mentioned before the break, that question, and I think I brought it up with you. This was last time we talked. It was pretty fresh that Project Blue had been defeated unanimously by the council. As you mull over this, and I know you continue to do that, what are you coming up with? What's in your brain when you think about Project Blue?
There's always going to. I think Project Blue and lessons learned from it is going to carry with us for quite some time. I also want to just note that Project Blue itself is only dead in the city of Tucson.
Right.
That conversation is still quite active in the region. I think data centers themselves are going to be wrestled with for quite some time inside and outside the city. And there's news on a daily basis about additional sites in the region that folks are looking at. So while that particular project and that particular approach is dead in the city, certainly the conversation is not dead. Having said that, I think a few lessons or things to ponder. One is we are actively following Mayor and Council's direction to really establish the zoning and land use guidelines around potential future data center proposals. And that is, per their direction is let's make sure that we have guidelines and sideboards and things that if a data center were to come to the city again, what would be considered by the city in looking at that and by the mayor and council. And we expect by the spring to be back in front of mayor and council with those guidelines. And in the interim, we've also issued a determination from our zoning administrator that no data center could be built in the city by right. That means that even while we're working on those sideboards and guidelines, a data center would still have to go through mayor and council, even with our existing laws on the books. So that's one piece. I think there's going to be a lot of continued discussion about the balance of overall natural resource use and data centers, and whether or not the city participates or not is one set of facts. But a data center coming to the region is going to use energy and potentially use a significant amount of water. If it uses zero or less water, it uses more energy. So that really has implications for climate action conditions in our region, whether a data center is in the city or not. So I think the conversation Project Blue really catalyzed a lot of thinking in the region about all of those matters. And how do we not be taken advantage of like some communities have, and but also recognizing that data centers are the thing that people are bringing forward and are willing to invest in, and how do we protect our community while potentially getting some benefit from it? I'll couple that with the fact that it really points to also economic development in general in the city and in the region. And right now, I don't know that we have a lot of alignment between what the city's interests are and what others in the region may have interests. And really, the conversation over the next few months is, what is the city wanting to say yes to, and how do we make that our emphasis for economic development?
You know, one thing, thinking about Project Blue, Project Blue isn't happening in the city, but it's still happening in the county, and they're going to have at least three phases. I mean, that's a project that's ongoing. And I recently, spoke to one of the Town of Marana council members that there's going to be a project that's going to be happening in Marana, which it's not clear to me whether that's one of the phases of Project Blue or something else. Do you have a sense right now, at least from your stance, of where Project Blue is right now?
You are correct. So the exact same site that was asked to be annexed into the city and serviced by the city is the exact same site, which is still being developed into a data center. It's just being done outside the city limits and without city resources, so therefore not using the city's
water.
No tapping into the city's water.
Right.
But still the region's energy. So and I don't know that they're even calling it Project Blue anymore. If I were them, I probably wouldn't. But that the original concepts from that set of developments all along was multiple sites, including that site right there, the county-owned land. There was for a long time discussion of one of the sites being in the Marana area. So I don't know for sure, but I could speculate that that is likely a component of this same overall development. And then the additional site that is not really under consideration right now, or certainly not, because it there were additional sites in the city limits that would have been contemplated, and they're not under contemplation or development right now. Multiple data centers in multiple locations right now outside the city limits.
One of the things that
city
folks,
limits of Tucson,
the folks in town of Marana, they created an ordinance that's has some restrictions about how data centers can be built. There's setbacks, there's noise ordinances, there's even structures to make sure that even the building's not ugly. It's not just a giant slab, but it has some landscaping. Is that something the city in part is going to move towards? What are you looking at in terms of kind of restricting data centers? Is it going to be about just resources, or are there going to be more to it?
There would absolutely be more to it. And what I'll preface it with saying is Project Blue, had it been progressing through the city, would have had setbacks, design requirements, all of those things that are present in an ordinance like what Marana has, like what Chandler has, and what Tucson is developing. The absence of those ordinances being in place would not have allowed Project Blue would it to have proceeded to not have all of those considerations. In fact, those were discussions underway. Having said that, you are correct. It is not just about resource use. In fact, it's a lot about land use, setback, noise, all the things that are considerations for a data center to be in proximity to, where people live, work, and play. Separate from that and complementary to that, the city is also, we have adopted a large water users ordinance that we have an ad hoc task force looking at potential revisions to it that would layer on top of that. And that's not restricted to data centers. It's any large water using development will have additional requirements if they wanted to site within the Tucson Water Service Area.
But that's only within the Tucson Water Service Area, which is bigger than Tucson, but not by much. You don't have control over, say, like Copper World, for example, about the water usage that they would have.
That's correct. The Tucson Water Service Area reaches about 3/4 of the developed part of Pima County. So it is, about 750,000 folks, but it is not in a lot of the areas where some of these like the mining developments are occurring or things of that nature.
Let's go to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Robert would like to weigh in on data centers. Go ahead, Robert.
Yes, Bill. You do not have to scrub YouTube at all to find numerous instances where the citizens were completely dissatisfied. You do have to scrub it to find one where they gained any advantage, which you cannot find. But my question for the guest is, at one time, supercomputers used to take up an entire room. Are these, but now they've got it baked down to the same power on your wrist in the size of a watch. Are these behemoths going to go the same way and just be testimony to big, ugly, empty structures?
That's a great question. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I'd say that's a very fair question. And it is something that came up a little bit. I mean, there was the overwhelming discussion around Project Blue was about resource use, both water and energy, but that by no means are all the issues or concerns that folks. So the future proofing of if you're going to build these mega square foot places, and they already know that they replace that technology at least every 5 years. And every time they do it, everything shrinks and is more powerful. So you fill that same square footage with significantly more computing power, because, you know, once you've built it, you want to sell as much of that as you can. But you're right. Within the next 10 to 15 years, will these large centers even be necessary because of the efficiencies of computing? And as Council Member Nikki Lee in the Ward 4 of Tucson, you know, she's future looking at, you know, are data centers more likely to be in space than on the ground, because you're dealing with, you know, you want a stable environment. You have to deal with this heating and cooling, which in space is a totally different issue. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of research going into there. So I think that is a real risk. And the real risk is not just did you build a bunch of warehouse looking things, which we would make not be hideously ugly, but maybe not the most beautiful things. And are they now vacant? I think there's always going to be a use for space like that. That could house other industry. But the biggest risk that I think has not yet been resolved is if we invest all of this infrastructure in delivering megawatts and upon megawatts of power, and then you no longer need that industry, how much stranded asset there? And I know that at least the first phase of Project Blue was de-risked, if you want to call it that. But when you look at the proliferation, are we going to end up with a whole bunch of energy generation and infrastructure that maybe goes unused or at least unused for a period of time?
I mean, that was part of the agreement for Project Blue, was that there wouldn't be, Project Blue couldn't have, get the city to do everything, build the pipeline, do all that work, and then sort of disappear because their business model collapsed. They would have to cover some of that, correct?
That's correct. And that's both with the city, but also with working directly with Tucson Electric Power.
Fox Theater, they're hoping to expand, and I guess the city council is going to be cooperating. There's demolition of a building right adjacent to the theater. What's going on there?
Yeah, I don't think it's quite White House East Wing level demolition.
But it's not that
then again,
dramatic.
Not that we would even know before it would happen. So the Fox Theater, which in itself is a success story and a historical restoration, they had purchased the kind of building immediately adjacent to them, and that they did that with the intention of being able to expand into that space. Which I'm a Fox supporter. There's great parts to it, but right, ADA access maybe not the best. You have if it's intermission time and you're out in the you know, trying to put 1,500 people in a space for 100, they really have a great, in my opinion, a great vision for what to do with that additional space. So the reason they had to come to the city was to make sure that they can, you know, process their permits and do all their things that are necessary to to activate that space. But there's also the building they were buying itself had some elements that could be viewed as historic, and it was a contributing structure to the downtown, you know, that part of downtown in the historic district. So one should not do that without having a public conversation. That's another point to the White House. But in this case, they did. They had the public conversation. The mayor and council concurred. So the Fox Theater is able to do that vision and do the work they need to make it an even better asset for the community.
So maybe the public will actually get to see the plans of what they're actually going to build and exactly how it's going to be done.
That's correct. So as they go through all that process, and actually, when we had that public hearing, there was a slide deck that the developers could have shown, but it wasn't necessary to show. So I don't know if that was, I'll be totally honest, I don't know if that was in the materials for the meeting. If it wasn't, I think they're happy to share what their vision is in there. And certainly as they go through permitting, all of that is very public and accessible.
All right, before we let you go, the housing and homelessness emergency may be declared within 45 days. Bottom line, what is that, Tim Tomier?
So it's kind of twofold. I mean, we recognize, and our mayor has been very clear about our need to emphasize on making sure that Tucson is a safe city, not just in reality, but also how people feel and perceive Tucson. So our Safe City Initiative is something that's going to be a guidepost for us moving forward. When you look at the housing elements of being a safe city, which housing insecurity is a major issue, and it's a symptom of a number of concerns, but one of the big gaps there is having enough available housing for those that are in need and or even in want. So the creating an emergency would allow us to have some expedited and some, I guess, loosening of some zoning rules and other things that we have in place for a variety of very good reasons, protecting the nature and the culture of Tucson. But when you're thousands of units behind on the number of housing units that we need in this community, and we're projected to be that we're 33,000 units short in the very near future, we need to really make things more streamlined and more available to increase density, but also increase housing, increase investment from the private sector. And there's a number of tools that come into play there, but it's really about addressing that deficit in housing availability.
So this isn't just like city projects like the Amazon and some others where you build low income housing and that the city has, or the one that's at the Notel Motel. But this is actually making it easier for people to build apartment complexes or other kinds of similar multifamily housing.
That's correct. We need housing across the full spectrum, from affordable to it's affordable and subsidized to market rate. We need all of that. That entire inventory needs to be increased, and the city will not be able to do that by itself, nor should the city do it by itself. The private sector doing what the private sector does is going to be the bulk of it.
Do you have an idea of why the city's so far behind on this? Like, why are we falling by 33,000?
Oh, sure.
What's been happening over the last couple of years to make this happen?
I think the housing affordability crisis is not uniquely Tucson's. Mm-hmm. I think there's a variety of things going on there, and it's happening across the entire country, as a matter of fact. I'd say I don't know that Tucson's done anything uniquely to position itself to be behind, but Tucson can uniquely position itself to get the housing units we need.
All right, Tim Tomier, hope you and your family have a real spooky Halloween. Hope it all goes well for you.
You too, Bill. It was a pleasure joining you today.
And good to talk to you.
Even though it was last year's Photographer of the Year, I was still enjoying the conversation.
All right, thanks a lot. Segment 3 is coming up.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
All righty, about this time, Paul Ingram, I'm ready for Mona's. Yeah, Mona's Danish Bakery. Terrific European-style pastries. Their Danish Kringle is their signature pastry. And believe it or not, Thanksgiving is just around the corner, and that's when Steve and the team up at Mona's really spring into action and really excel with all of their, not just pumpkin pie, all the wonderful fruit pies and all the great rolls for your Thanksgiving table. So start thinking about it. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Go to the website and there's a beautiful picture of pretty much everything on the menu. You'll be very tempted. I'll just throw out one suggestion. Their almond croissant, Paul, is really good.
I mean, that sounds delicious. I love a good croissant.
I know. All right, a couple of stories, not much time here in segment three. Let's dive into the Adelita Grijalva situation.
Sure.
My goodness, this was the state or whoever signs off on that officially, Pima County. That seems like it was a long time ago, and she's still not sworn in.
Yeah, I mean, she won in September 23rd,
so there
it's been a couple of weeks, you know, more than a couple of weeks, actually, and she's still not seated. This week, our AG, Arizona AG, Chris Mays, launched a lawsuit, and the lawsuit is really asking a judge to order the House, including the clerk and the sergeant-at-arms, to move forward and seat Adelita Grijalva. as our the representative for most of big chunk of Southern Arizona. So yeah, it's part of the process. This hadn't really happened before.
I think that lawsuit is unprecedented.
I think so. Yeah. And I just don't think we've had this kind of situation before. Usually people get seated pretty quickly.
Yeah, they go to Washington, they get sworn in, the pictures, you know.
Right, right.
And that happens. On the Bible or whatever.
Right. And yeah. I mean, normally with like the, you know, with regular elections, you know, there's kind of a pretty clear, you know, A, B, C process in this. And then, of course, well, special elections are a little weird, but this is the first time where we've had somebody who's been elected. And of course, the state sent certified the election. So all the paperwork is done. There's really shouldn't be a holdup. But the Speaker of the House is not moving forward on the parts that he needs to do to make sure not only that she's seated and takes her oath, but also that she gets to open her office here in Tucson, that she can hire staff. You know, I think there's limitations. She can't use the printer. She just got the keys to her office, but she can't really do anything.
She can't do anything.
So, you know, I mean, I think it really holds up. And, you know,
and the people don't have representation then in that
district
in D.C.
And that's really going to come to become more important. I mean, if the budget negotiations kind of start moving again, I mean, that's one vote that the Democrats would have that they don't get to have because she hasn't been seated.
The other big story of the week was the University of Arizona did decide on Monday that they would not accept the deal from the Trump administration, that special deal.
The compact.
Whatever, yeah, was offered to, I don't know, was it a dozen something? Yeah, about a dozen.
Nine.
Okay.
Yeah.
None accepted the deal except the University of Texas.
The University of Texas agreed wholeheartedly with it. Everyone else said essentially no with qualifications or no, absolutely not.
So everybody on social media seems to be saying the U of A didn't close the door entirely. How do you read that?
I think that's a good way of talking about it. You know, I mean, I think the university rejected it as it's written, but they agreed with some of the tenets that were baked into this. I mean, one thing about like how tuition should be set, maybe we shouldn't keep raising tuition every year. Talking about how, you know, the idea that the U of A already does a lot of things where it really makes sure that kids who go to the U of A are picked based on merit, that they're not, you know, there's other qualifications that aren't paid as much attention to. And so the U of A, what's interesting is U of A put like a set of principles. They said, these are our principles. This is where we would like to negotiate from. And so there's a sense, I think, from the U of A, I mean, they went to the White House last Friday, and had a discussion with the White House, and really what is interesting is how the White House put this document forward as a, we would like you to agree to this. Well, maybe some changes, but this is basically the final document. And now that most of the universities have said no, the White House is now more interested in negotiating. It's also expanded the number of universities that have been gone to compact, and now like ASU is asked to be part of the compact. You know, one of the things I think is really tricky about this is that the White House was asking universities to give up a lot of academic freedom, you know, even restricting whether employees could be critical of certain things. There was also, they couldn't really talk about current events. There was lots of restrictions, you know, the number of international students, et cetera. And the universities didn't want to do that. And at the same time, the White House was saying, well, if you do this, we'll give you faster access to federal grants. There was more money involved. And the question always been, and I think the Regents professors at the U of A made a good point about this. They said, you know, this is a quid pro quo, but we don't know what the quo is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's this idea, you give up a lot. For
what?
It's a mystery. And then the White House hasn't really been able to show their cards about what that actually means. U of A needs federal money. The reality is U of A research, lots of programs rely on federal money. So I think there's, you know, one university professor talked about this, you know, the U of A can't say no to the federal government. It has to get money from
it's
the federal
government. Kind of a lifeblood of that university.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's where the university ends up.
All right, Paul Ingram, we will look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. Give my regards to Dylan and the team, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Coming up next, Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive. Ken Carr will join me right after this.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
A proposed $2.6 billion regional transportation plan will be funded by a half-cent sales tax if Pima County voters approve the plan and tax next March for another 20 years. The tax rate will not increase. Funding from the 2006 voter-approved plan is expected to bring a $3.67 billion economic impact to the greater Tucson region. The sales tax investment for RTA Next will lead to a similar economic impact and more than 88,000 jobs over the next 20-plus years. Learn more about RTA Next funding and proposed projects at RTANext.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Alrighty then, time for Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive. You know, taking off for Silver City is a good decision, especially this time of year. Find yourself a very enchanting weekend ahead of you by taking approximately 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Ton of stuff to do, and the Gila National Wilderness looking really good with all of the autumn color. It's always fun, October in New Mexico. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is, 101.7's The Drive, Ken Carr. Ken, it's Halloween. Next Halloween will come up 1 week from today, but boy, judging by all the Halloween activities, you'd think it's today.
You'd think so. Well, before we get to Halloween, a few things I want to cover. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Celtic Fest when we were off the air.
Celtic festivals this weekend. The Celtic Festival is this weekend. It's at the Rialto. Rialto Park.
If it was at the Rialto.
You
really, really packed
would,
in
that
there.
That would make the caber toss real awkward.
But you'd still look good in the skirts.
In the kilts, yeah.
In the kilts, yes. I always call them skirts. So we have that this weekend. Dogtoberfest at Fort Lowell Park.
That's the dogs.
At Craycroft and Glenn. And we're going to have the classic car we're giving away on the drive, the 67 Ford Fairlane there. Pets available for adoption. They're having a hot dog bobbing.
Hot dog bob. Okay.
Yep. And that's a whole the entire reason to go, just for hot dog bobbing. Food trucks and costume contests, that kind of thing. Cyclovia is coming up on Sunday. And if you're not aware of what Cyclovia is that they close some streets in Midtown and you can walk, you can bike, you can skate your way, and they keep all the car traffic off of there.
And it's really fun.
Yeah, and there's activity hubs and food vendors going on with that. And that's from 9 to 3 on Sunday. Wild Bunch Film Festival. Now, this is at the Galaxy Theaters, and this is today through Sunday. And it's the biggest film festival for the Western genre and Western lifestyle in the world. And there's some celebrities that are going. The one that stands out to me is Terry Kaiser. You recognize the name?
Yeah, from a very, very iconic movie.
Weekend at Bernie's. And the weird part about that is most of the movie he's dead.
But he's still alive here, so that's good.
I think it's harder to act as an actor if you're dead the whole time than if you're actually alive.
Can you imagine how many times they drop that guy?
Oh, gosh.
Probably still has bruises to this day.
Okay, Ken, Halloween, quickly.
Halloween, Nightfall at Old Tucson, that's going on this weekend. The Slaughterhouse, the last year that they're doing that because they've sold the building. That's Grant east of I-10. Terror in the Corn, west of I-10 off of Avra Valley exit, the region's biggest corn maze. And then there's things like Pistons and Pumpkins, which is a trick-or-treating and classic cars event at the Rolling Through Time Auto Museum, and many more. But that's a few of the things going on this weekend.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Ken Carr. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Paul Ingram. Hope you guys have a great weekend.
Appreciate it. Thank you.